The Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3.
Portuguese food. I promise to tell you my favorite Portuguese dish. It is the Portuguese egg tart. I know it's a bit of a dessert dish. Pastel de nata. Uh-huh. So when I was in Portugal, what I did was every state that I went, I tried the pastel de nata to figure out which was the best. And funny enough, the best for me was in the airport in Lisbon. Does not make sense whatsoever.
No, but since you went to various states, were there any local, specific, you know, regional dishes that you enjoyed?
Wow, I can't think of any off the top of my head because I spent so long trying to find the best Portuguese egg tart. Of course, there are a lot. There was a restaurant in Lisbon that we went to, and the way they made their pork was very interesting. I remember that. And it was a very authentic restaurant, the way they were shouting orders. Of course, the Portuguese people, chefs and whatnot, the conversations that were going on. So really, you think of food, you think of a place that you've been, you think of a happy memory, and that's pretty much the way, you know, food shapes our lives in that sense.
Which brings us then to a Portuguese flame grilled chicken chain from Australia.
Yes.
Now, they've partnered with private equity group Aura Group to expand into Asia. They opened their first store in Singapore a year ago.
Now, Aura Group secured the Oporto franchise for Singapore and plans to open 10 stores in Singapore in the next 5 years. The inaugural Singapore store is located in Holland Village. The menu comprises an array of flame-grilled chicken, burgers, wraps, and sides such as chips and grilled corn.
Now, the chain's burger was created by a Portuguese-born Australian, António Chiqueira, I hope I pronounced that right, in 1986. And gets its uniqueness really from its original chili sauce.
Of course, right? Portuguese were spice traders, so it has to come down to the chili. Well, after Singapore, Oporto opened in Sri Lanka, and they've got plans to open up to 50 stores across Asia in the next 5 years. Vietnam, emerging market, Thailand, top of the list, where Aura has operations. So we're going to find out this morning how its business operations are doing in Singapore. Joining us in the studio in the hot seat this morning is Charles Wong, Director Head of Asia at Aura Group. Of course, Aura are partners at Oporto. Good morning, Charles. How
good
are you
morning,
today?
Elliot. Good morning, Brian.
Thanks a lot for coming by. And let's start off with talking about the partnership between Aura Group and Oporto. How did this come about?
It's a great question. I think food is all about time, yeah, place, yeah, you know, enjoyment and so forth. And if I'm really honest about how the partnership occurred, it was really serendipitous. It started as a result of one of our managing directors of Aura making the move over from Sydney to Singapore to join myself and a set of the core team here. And as part of that move, he reminisced and thought, you know, what I miss very much back in Bondi, back in Maroubra, is my Bondi burger, my flame-grilled chicken. And it just so happened, at about that exact same time, Craveable Brands was also establishing its presence in the Southeast Asia region. They had just appointed an international CEO. And that individual also happened to be a mutual friend of Calvin Ng, that managing director, and myself. So we went out, and usually, as what happens, you have a few drinks, you have a few more, and then at some point during the night, we realized this was a partnership made in heaven. We shook hands on a deal, and we realized this should be our flagship investment for what would be our Aura Franchise Opportunities Fund and our first F&B investment here in Singapore.
What sectors you really invest in terms of Aura Group? Because F&B is not something that a lot of private equity gets into in this part of the world.
Yeah, sure. So as Aura, we focus within our funds management business across predominantly alternative assets, which we split into venture capital and private equity. And within the private equity sector, we're nowhere near the bulge bracket guys yet. So we're in the growth equity phase. Now, in the two categories, how I like to delineate that is in the venture capital space, we're looking at technology-driven enabled businesses. And within the growth equity space, a place where we have, if you like, an unfair advantage.
Okay.
In the latter case, it's not a place that, well, it is a place, however, a lot of private equity guys have gone in, but many of them have got burned. We feel that based on our track record, many of our family businesses, many of the affiliate organizations we've been involved with have been extremely successful in growing F&B businesses around the world. One of my family businesses is specifically in this space, as well as a supplier to one of the largest QSRs. And so as a result, we felt like we had a bit of that edge. And so being ballsy and having had a few of those drinks, we decided to go into it.
Now, apart from that drink session, Charles, you are Director, Head of Asia, Aura Group. Could you share more specifically about what you do for the group?
Sure. So originally, and as the team likes to say, I was employee number one. in the region. Okay. So the guinea pig to see whether or not what we had as a business back in Sydney and in Australia, which at the time was about 30 to 40 people, could be brought here to Southeast Asia, mm-hmm. where we felt a lot of the growth was for the overall regional market. Suffice it to say, today our Aura Group as an organization is over 100 people large, of which now 35 sit here in Singapore, across Thailand and in Vietnam.
Give us an idea of your portfolio companies at the moment in the various sectors that you're looking at.
Sure. So within the venture space, we have a flagship venture capital firm here for Southeast Asia, which we call TNB Aura Fund 1. And then we have the sister fund for that, a little bit old in terms of its vintage, back in Australia, called the Aura Venture Fund. Effectively, the same set of businesses we invest into Series A and Series B businesses. Mm-hmm. And then within the more private equity space, where the risk appetite and tolerance is not quite as binary, we tend to make what we call single-purpose vehicle investments, where we look at a specific thesis in the market. Let's take Porto specifically here. If you're looking at anywhere to invest in a very crowded market, to be very honest, in Singapore, a very foodie-driven market.
Yeah.
You want to be looking at something where you're playing the larger trends, sectoral trends, right? So in Singapore, I'm not sure if it's particularly well-known, but over 40% of the protein consumed here is chicken.
Chicken.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, if you think about the growth rate of that subsector of the market, it actually grows at not 5, not 6, not 8, but 12% per year. Mm. So we're looking at a market in the chicken space, which is growing. Mm. Naturally, Singaporeans have, and myself included, a love for Singaporean chicken rice and many other chicken-type products. But we felt that if you could bring something that was differentiated into the market, not just about the product, which we can talk a bit more about, but also about the essence, the adventurous spirit of the brand, there could be and there will be a niche that we can carve out for ourselves here.
I'm going to quote Charles the next time my partner asks me, why do you always eat chicken? Well, statistically, we're always eating chicken. Let's talk about your partnership with Oporto and the grilled chicken. You go into a market, yes, you've got over 40% protein consumed being chicken. What makes Oporto's grilled chicken so special? What makes it so unique?
Sure. So let me start with the sort of the basics, if you like, the hygiene factors, right? You've got to have an exceptional product. Mm. So for us, that is the flame grilled chicken, and it is the legendary chili sauce, and truly legendary. We tried our best to try and say, look, why don't we try and make it here? Not possible. It has to be made the original way. Back in Australia, we actually import that here. And it takes us a while and actually at a cost to being able to do so.
What's that process like? Like how long? Estimate.
To be honest, it's a trade secret. I'm only allowed 40,000 foot view at this point. If I could get the secret sauce, I probably wouldn't. No, I'm just joking about that. So besides those two, I think the third is this passion for service excellence and that quality. The team we've brought on here is second to none. So our local operators here, they've been doing it for decades now. Our supply chain is one of the best in Singapore. And what we feel that allows us to do is not just deliver that exceptional experience in store every single day, mm-hmm. but also be able to say with confidence that second store, third store, fourth store, no problem. We're ready.
Singapore is a very crowded space in the F&B space. You're competing for the very discerning consumer in Singapore. Everyone knows their food. What's the strategy from a differentiation standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, that will make you stand out from the crowd?
Yeah, absolutely, Brian. So I think besides the product, the service quality and excellence, it does have to come down to one thing about Singaporeans. But by the way, I'm Malaysian, just became PR, so it's a little bit of a dichotomy here I have to balance. Thriftiness. Value for money. Now, everybody knows, and on air I won't say, but there is another brand out there in the market today. What we and how we feel we differentiate particularly clearly against that, and also against other brands which are positioning, you know, international QSRs being brought here, is this value for money. I'll just give you an example, Brian. Our Bondi burger specifically starts at just $5.90, and then our chicken is just $6.90. So those sort of starting price points mean that it's accessible throughout the market. And that's actually one of the core tenets of the Oporto business and one that we strongly believe in, which is making sure that our food isn't elitist. Mm. It isn't just secluded to the white-collar sector of the market. Mm. Anyone and everyone, walks of life, are always welcome.
That kind of competitive pricing, you're looking at bringing in a lot of families with young children who really enjoy a nice burger.
Absolutely, absolutely. And actually, one of the nice stories that I like to mention at the beginnings of how Oporto started is when we set up, we found that many of the construction construction workers who are now working on the site right next to Holland Piazza now and continue to be regular customers of ours. In fact, they come in every morning at about the same time, order the exact same thing, take it away for their friends and colleagues back at the site.
Best source of protein after, you know, I mean, if you're working in a construction
center. You know, chicken is the cheapest source of protein.
It is indeed.
Talking about Oporto and how it's chosen Singapore as the first location outside of Australia and New Zealand. Why Singapore? I know you mentioned the amount of chicken that we consume, but I mean, it is a trend across Asia anyway, right? So why Singapore?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think it is. The basic stats don't lie in terms of where the market's going. But let me come back to that. I think the reason why Singapore was the first that craveable brands select to launch outside of their home markets, to be honest, came down to their partner. So I do like to think that working with ourselves as the Aura Group was one of the primary factors for them saying, look, this is the first ship off, cab off the rank, if you like. Mm-hmm. It is a nod to the Singaporean government and the way in which the business economy and the ecosystem here just makes things easy to set up.
Okay.
We had an ecosystem already in place. We know many of the market makers here in terms of the supply chain, finance and capital markets. And so being able to build our business here from the ground up wasn't that difficult from the outset.
Was it easy to see Singapore as a bit of a trendsetter in that sense?
Absolutely. I think it is. It still continues to have that role within the Southeast Asian nation, though it does mean that when you build it out for other markets, when we choose to go into that those markets with the craveable business, we will need to focus on localizing the content, right? And so I think, what's the marketing strategy in place here? I think one of the most interesting things about how Antonio Cerqueira from the very beginning set up Oporto back in Bondi was to be hyperlocal. He didn't realize he was doing it at the time, but it wasn't to create, you know, one of the largest and the number one QSR brand in Australia, but in fact to create the local chicken joint that mums, dads, families, friends, and so forth would be very happy to just swing by, grab it. It's unpretentious, it's delicious, and just go in and grab that chicken, that Bondi burger, whenever they see fit.
Okay, and that's going to impact unpretentious, delicious, but what I'd like to find out is really, you're a private equity firm.
Sure.
So what's the financial strategy behind this, particularly because A, you're looking for mass market, so you're talking about price points of $590, $690 and so forth, in a market where your items are all imported, so food costs are going to be a significant issue, rentals are going to be a significant issue as well in Singapore. So what's the financial strategy for you as a private equity firm?
Yeah, so it's an excellent question. Let me clarify a couple of things first. So I think in the source specifically is absolutely imported. We have to do that. It has to be true to form and true to the original recipe. For all the other products, we have made sure that is locally sourced. So the chicken, for example, is fresh, not frozen, comes in from Malaysia, in fact. Most of the other product is either produced or sourced locally. And I'm very happy to say that of the mistakes that we have made in the first initial stages of the business, sourcing and COGS has not been one of those.
What's the financial strategy then? What's the exit strategy for you as a private equity company?
If you are going to play, and this is my own personal musings on the topic, in the F&B space, you need something that is mass scalable. So the fast casual, higher end restaurants, they may have at an individual restaurant level, a higher level of profitability and EBITDA margin. Mm-hmm. But as a group, you're looking to amortize that cost, that shared cost across a much larger base. And that's where you start getting the scale benefits of running an F&B chain.
And so you have the franchise for how many countries?
So we've got the franchise first and only at this point for Singapore. At this stage, Craveable has not appointed for the rest of Southeast Asia. And to be very honest, they're looking at appointing one for the rest of the region.
Okay.
And if it happens to be us, that would be all the better.
Charles Wong, Director, Head of Asia at Aura Group, the owner of Oporto. Since Oporto has been in Singapore for about close to a year now, what sort of revenue are you making comparing with your home market in Australia? If you can't give a number, some kind of percentage will be great, Charles.
Yeah, sure. So I think, as you mentioned, we're not one to disclose the individual revenues of our portfolio businesses. Having said that, from a common size statement basis, so looking at proportional measures of COGS, of rental, level of staffing. We were also relatively surprised to see that almost from the get-go, we were able to achieve similar store proportional profitability, same-sized stores back in Australia. And part of that is a function of the fact that, as I mentioned, before we came in, we really took the time to work through our supply chain. So we've got a partner here who helps us with that.
So safe to say you're ahead of target or ahead of schedule where your targets are concerned.
Yeah, so I think, again...
What was the initial target profitability timeline?
Actually, on a profitability basis, when with private equity, you're looking for that to be hit pretty quickly. So within the 3 to 6 months period, you're looking at having the demonstrated ability to hit profits. And then at that point in time, if the way we put it in the venture space, you can hit, take your head, put it back down in, spend more on marketing, grow the business, look at new sites and the CapEx necessary to do so.
Taking your point there, you plan to set up 10 restaurants across Singapore in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Is that going to be all company-owned stores or will that be franchised?
So at least for the first four, we'll have that as company-owned. In fact, at this point in time, as we're speaking, we're inking new deals for two new sites here in Singapore, one to cover the east and one to cover the west.
Talking about Aura Group's plans to launch in places like Vietnam and Thailand, aside from the fact that, you know, fast food, it does okay there, not particularly great. It's a place known for local street food. And you talked about localization. So what's the plan of attack here?
It would be a bit premature for me to say at this point exactly how we would look to take specifically the importer business into Vietnam or Thailand. As you've mentioned, many of the even larger QSRs have, for want of a better term, just failed in those markets or gone in and found it very, very difficult to compete against. And it's very hyper-local on a dollar-cost basis of the street food and so forth.
But generally, do you have a timeline or a hope that of when you could possibly enter that market?
Yeah, so I think...
Has it been talked about?
Yeah. From at a group level, let me partition between what Aura is looking to do and then what Aporto is looking to do. Sure. Within the Aura group, we're already there. We've made investments into Vietnam, deployed several millions of dollars over the last just 12 months already into Vietnam. Thailand, we are very quite well known there now. I'm looking at expanding our presence as well. And from the Aporto side of things, we do want to ensure that infrastructure that we had here in Singapore is already in place before we even make the move and have a chat to Craig Tozer at Craveable in order to do so.
Aporto is owned by Craveable Brands. And back in 2017, they pulled out the IPO. now there's talk that the IPO could be back on the table. What's your latest news on this?
Unfortunately, Brian, this is something that it's not really for me to comment on, to be honest, so apologies for that.
Okay, no worries.
We've been speaking this morning with Charles Wong, Director, Head of Asia at Aura Group. They are the owner of Aporto. You can check them out in Holland Village area. Thanks a lot for being in a hot seat this morning. Last chance, Charles, can we get the secret sauce recipe?
No, however, there is one thing that I would say is that if you haven't tried, and even if you have tried, this is our one-year anniversary starting today. For the next week, anyone who comes to our Aporto Holland Piazza store, go in. You just add $1 and you make anything into a meal.
Okay. That's
interesting. That's a shameless plug.
We're going, Brian. And where is the chili sauce recipe hidden?
It's in my right jacket pocket at this
someone
point.
Someone restrain Charles. Thanks so much for coming by for being great sport. Charles Wong, Director, Head of Asia at Aura Group.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.